So the month of Tevis in the Kollel is sponsored by 5 Minutes of Torah. You can visit 5minutesoftorah.com to learn more. This week of learning is sponsored by Gabe and Aaron Saporta, L'schus Refuah Shleima of For Shimon Ben Tzipora. And today's learning is sponsored by our very own Shoshana and Rabbi Jonah Steinmetz, L'schus Speedy Refuah Shleima for Sarah Shendel Bas Leah. Okay, so tonight we're going to discuss two topics. Without further ado, we'll get into the first topic. So the Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, on Daf Ayin Gimel Amud Beis and Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, quotes the... Welcome, Yoni. The Gemara on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis quotes the statement, the famous statement of Rav Pinchas Mishmei Derava. Rav Pinchas Mishmei Derava says, Kol Hanoderes... Adas Bailahinoderis. That the basis for the whole institution, halachic institution of Hafaras Abal, that a Baal can be mefer the Nedarim of his wife, is based on the assumption that when a woman takes a neder, she has in mind that her Baal should be okay with it. It's conditional upon the desire of her Baal to keep the neder, and that's what gives the Baal the koach to be mefer the nether. The Gemara quotes this in the following context. We know that every marriage has two steps, right? There are two stages to every marriage. One is erusin, the first step is erusin, and the second step is nisuin, right? Erusin is when there's kedushin, that's when the kedushin takes place, and nisuin is when they actually live together under the same house, under the same roof. So we know when it comes to hafaras habal, for the baal, for the husband to be mefer the nedarim on his own, nisuin has to take place. If they're just engaged, if it's just during the period of erusin, he needs the help of the father. If she's a nara, he needs the help of the father to annul the nedarim. But once there is nisuin, then the baal of his own accord can be mefer the nedarim. That is, with respect to nedarim, the significance of erusin and nisuin. So the Gemara says, in a few places in Shas, here in Nedarim and in Maseches Nida, that there are certain instances when, even if, technically speaking, a full-fledged nisuin hasn't taken place, still, under certain circumstances, the Baal will be able to be made for the Nedarim on his own. Even though, technically speaking, full-fledged nisuin hasn't taken place. Yeah. You fit in there? Sure?
Yes, for sure.
Okay. So even though full-fledged nisuin hasn't taken place, we got to expand. Full-fledged nisuin hasn't taken place, still, the Baal can be made for the Nedarim. So in our sugya, the Gemara says, in the context of the idea of Yud Beis Chodesh, in the time of the Gemara, there would be a year window between erusin and nisuin. They would get engaged, they would have erusin, and then they would have 12 months to prepare for the wedding. And the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Ksuvos has the din that if for whatever reason they don't get married after Yud Beis Chodesh, the Baal becomes obligated to support his wife even though they haven't done nisuin yet. That's the din of Mizonos after Yud Beis Chodesh, the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Ksuvos, and the Gemara here by us. So the Gemara here quotes the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer that if 12 months pass and they haven't done nisuin, they haven't had the chuppah, the full marriage ceremony, and the nisuin hasn't taken place, Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that the Baal can still be made for the Nedarim, right? Even though full-fledged nisuin hasn't taken place, but the Baal can still do hafaras habal, hafaras haneder, on his own. Even though usually nisuin has to take place, in this context, it's sufficient for him to be obligated to support her in order for him to be able to do hafaras haneder. Now, the Gemara says, how does that work? So in that context, the Gemara invokes the memra of Rav Pinchas Mishmei Derava that kol hanoderes aldaz baile hinoderes. Since every woman, when she takes a neder, she does it with the condition in mind that her husband should be okay with the nether, should acquiesce. Therefore, that's what gives the Baal the koach to do hafaras nedarim. And therefore, in this context, even though technically speaking, nisuin hasn't taken place, but since the Baal is obligated to support her and he is supporting her, therefore that already creates that type of relationship where she is noderis. Aldaz baila, she is noderis with her husband and her future husband in mind. And that's what gives him the koach to do hafar. Okay, that is the Gemara. Now the Ran over here in source 2, that's the Gemara in source 1, I just paraphrased it. The Gemara in the Ran in source 2 quotes a major machlokas rishonim whether this idea of kol hanoderis al das baila hinoderis can serve as a paradigm or a precedent for other types of nedarim. For example, let's say I take a neder, and we always use Evan. I want to take a neder, and I want this neder to be conditional upon Evan's ratzon. I'm noder al das Evan. I don't say it explicitly, but I have it in mind. So do we say that now Evan can be made for the neder? I don't have to go to a basin to go through classical hataras nedarim. Maybe just like when it comes to hafaras a baal, since kol hanoderis al das baal hanoderis, the baal of his own, on his own, can be made for the neder, so too, when I take a neder with my friend in mind, that friend can now has the same koach of the baal, and he could just be made for the neder without me going to a basin. So the Ran quotes one opinion in the Rishonim that actually works. That actually works. That just like a woman takes a neder with her husband in mind, so, and that's what gives him the koach to do hafara, so to anyone who has his friend in mind, that gives him the koach to do hafara. So the Ran, if you take a look in the bolded in source 3, says, in source 2, I'm sorry, but the third line says, V'zo esli shgagas hora, shigigas hora. The Ran says that he thinks that this is a mistake. The afal gav the amar al das baila hino deris, even though the Gemara, it's true, the Gemara says that the woman takes a neder with her husband in mind. Afilu hachi sarach baal sheyafir la ba'osa lashon shekatzvu la Torah ugzeiras hakasavu. The Ran says, still, the baal has to use the classical lashonos of hafara, meaning it's not a free-for-all. It's not a free-for-all that you see an idea of being noderis, being noder al-das someone else. There's a clear gzeiras hakasav that the Torah said, the Torah prescribed in this relationship, when a woman takes a neder, she has her husband in mind. The Torah prescribed that the husband now can be mefer if he uses the right lashon. But this is not a precedent for other areas, for other types of relationships where I can now start taking the darim and having my friend in mind and make it contingent upon his ratzon hen, he can be mefer. It's limited to a woman and her husband. That is, and the Ran goes on to explain how he knows that. But that's basically the machlokas between the Ran and these Rishonim, whether kol hanoderis al das baila hinoderis is a paradigm for other types of nedarim like that, or no, it's limited to the relationship between a woman and her husband. Okay, that's a hakdama for what we're about to discuss. What seems to emerge from the Gemara is that the Gemara is explaining that the reason the Torah instituted the idea of hafaras haneder is because the reality is that a woman, when she takes a neder, she has her husband in mind, kol hanoderis al das baila hinoderis. So at first glance, this seems to be a violation of the famous rule of lo darshinan taima dekra. Lo darshinan taima dekra. So let's give a little background to the sugya of darshinan taima dekra, and hopefully this will give us a better understanding of the rule of kol hanoderis al das baila hinoderis. So we know, most Rishonim assume that all mitzvos have some reasons behind them. We don't know all the reasons behind mitzvos, but there is a very valuable and worthy endeavor as to trying to understand the reason behind mitzvos. That's if you open up any a Sefer HaChinuch, every mitzvah, you'll see Mishar Shea Mitzvah. The Sefer HaChinuch will give you the reason behind the mitzvah. It's Mishar Shea Mitzvah. It's from the reasons behind the mitzvah, but not the only reason for the mitzvah. There's a value of understanding some of the reasons for the mitzvos to appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done for us by giving us the Torah. The Ramban discusses this in his Perush Shal Torah, the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim. We're surrounded by Rishonim and Achronim giving reasons, explaining the logic and how mitzvos benefit our lives in general. That is the sugya of Tamei HaMitzvos. Now, there's a major machlokas Tanoim about whether we are Doresh time of the Krah. Now, that's not the same thing as Tami HaMitzvos. Tami HaMitzvos is when we try to see the reasons behind the mitzvos and have that enhance our performance of the mitzvos. We're not going to use those reasons for the mitzvos to determine application of the halacha, right? We're not going to say, oh, you know, Kibud Av V'Em is all about I have to be makir tov to my parents, and therefore it's going to be limited to the rules of hakaras hatov, or shiluach hakein is all about having rachmanus on the mother bird. So if I shouldn't take, I don't want the egg in the first place, so then maybe I shouldn't do shiluach hakein. Maybe that's that it would be a violation of darshin and time of the cross. So what is darshin and time of the cross? So we know that when it comes to a melech, when it comes to a Jewish king, he has many special and extra mitzvos. For example, the melech has to write a special Sefer Torah. We learned about it in the second parak of Sanhedrin. The melech also has to, he can't have too much money. He can't have too many chariots. So there's another mitzvah that he can't have too many wives. So this is a Mishnah in Masechah Sanhedrin. If you take a look in Source 3, it says in the Mishnah, Lo yarbe lo nashim, ela shmona esrei. So the Mishnah says that the king is only allowed to have 18 wives. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, marbe hulo, ubilvad shelo yehim misiros aslibo. Rabbi Yehuda says he's allowed to have as many, as long as they don't stray him, they don't entice him to violate halacha. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Afilu achas umesiras libo, harizel lo yisaena. Reb Shimon says that even if there's one wife who's going to convince him to abandon Torah mitzvos, he shouldn't marry her. Mkein lama nemar lo yarbe lo nashin, dafilu kavigail, he shouldn't have more than 18 wives, even if they're such tzidkanios like Avigail. So what emerges is a major machlokes tanaim, whether the rule of lo yarbe lo nashin has any exceptions. Rabbi Huda is of the opinion that there's an exception to the rule, that as long as they are going to keep him on the straight and narrow, he's going to be able to observe Torah mitzvos, he can have as many wives as he wants. And the Tanakhama says, no, there's a rigid number 18. And Reb Shimon says, it depends on the wives. He can never have more than 18, but if there's one who's going to stray his heart, then he can't marry her. So the Gemara says, if you take a look in Source 3, the Gemara says, Lameima the Rabbi Yehuda Darish time of the Krah, Reb Shimon lo Darish time of the Krah. The implication is that Rabbi Yehuda uses the reasoning of the Pasuk, the reasoning of the Lacha, because it's clear in the Pasuk where the Torah prohibits the king to marry more than 18 wives, is because it's going to stray, shalo yasaros levavo, that his heart should not stray. So Rabbi Yehuda takes that reasoning of the Pasuk and applies it to the halacha. He says it's clear that the reason the Torah prohibited the king from marrying so many wives is because we don't want his heart to stray. We don't want him to abandon Torah mitzvos. But if he marries a bunch of Rebbes and Kanievskis, for lack of a better example, so then he can marry more than 18. He's taking the reason of the halacha, the reason of the mitzvah, and applying it in terms of limiting and expanding the halacha. So Rabbi Yehuda says, see, if the reason for the mitzvah is shelo yasaros levavo, that he shouldn't abandon Torah mitzvah, so if we can ascertain that he won't abandon Torah mitzvah, so he can marry as many wives as he wants. So Rabbi Yehuda is assuming darshin in time of the krah, and Rabbi Shimon holds lo darsh time of the krah. The Gemara, we're just skipping some of the Gemara, that's those three dots. The Gemara says that this seems to be a contradiction with the statement of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in another area of Halacha, that in another area of Halacha, Rabbi Yehuda assumes lo darshin in time of the krah, and Rabbi Shimon assumes darshin in time of the krah. So the Gemara ends up explaining like this: Ba'amad Rabbi Yehuda lo darsh time of the krah. Really, generally speaking, Rabbi Yehuda does not darsh time of the krah. He doesn't take the reasoning of the mitzvah and use it to limit or expand the halacha. Vishaini hacha, here it's different by lo yarbe lo nashim, dimifarish time of the krah, because the Torah is explicit in its reasoning for the mitzvah. Ma tam lo yarbe lo nashim, what's the reason the king should not have more than X number of wives, mishum de lo yasser levavo, because we don't want it to his heart to stray. Meaning, when the Torah is explicit about the reason for the mitzvah, then Rabbi Yehuda holds we will use the reason of the mitzvah to limit and expand the halacha. He is Dorish Shem Dekra only when it's explicit. However, if the Torah doesn't tell you the reason for the mitzvah, but we have some intuition of what the reason for the mitzvah is, you can never use that intuition to expand or limit, to manipulate the halacha. That's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Shimon holds, no. The Gemara goes on to explain, Rabbi Shimon really holds Darshin and Time of the Krah. Rabbi Shimon's of the opinion that if a person can intuit the reason for the mitzvah, a person, obviously not anyone, but a great Tana like Rabbi Shimon or of the like, who has a clear understanding of what the reason for the mitzvah is, that reason can actually be used to limit and expand, to manipulate the halacha when it applies and when it doesn't apply. So what emerges from the Gemara is a major machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, whether darshin in time of the krah, lo darshin in time of the krah. Rabbi Yehuda holds lo darshin in time of the krah. We don't use, generally speaking, we don't use the reason for the mitzvah to determine when to apply the halacha and when to not apply the halacha. And Rabbi Shimon holds darshin in time of the krah. We do use the reason to apply, to know when to apply the halacha and when to not apply the halacha. And we pass in like Rabbi Yehuda, lo darshin on time of the krah. That is the halacha, lo darshin on time of the krah, and therefore we should never use the reason for a halacha to determine when to apply a halacha or not to apply halacha. The problem is that there are many areas of halacha where it seems at first glance that we do use the reason for a mitzvah to limit or expand a halacha. For example, we know that there is a mitzvah of basar b'chalaf. What are the three things that you can't do with basar b'chalaf? What are the three things you can't do with basar b'chalaf?
Cook it.
Eat it. And benefit from it. But the Torah formulates it in one way. Lo sevashal gedi b'chalev imo. Exactly. So the Rambam says in Source 4, in Hilchos Machalos Asuros, in Halacha Beis, the second Halacha, Lo shasa kakas of miles or hachila, ela mipnei she'asar habishel. Says the Rambam, the Torah never explicitly forbade eating because it explicitly asered bishel. What does that mean? Kolomar, says the Rambam, that is to say, v'afilu bishulu asar, v'ein sorach lomer achilaso. Meaning, the Torah figured that we would understand that if cooking basar b'chalav is asr, then certainly eating basar b'chalav is asr. When it comes to arayos, the Torah only forbade explicitly a relationship with a granddaughter. So the Torah understood that we would be able to intuit, if a granddaughter is forbidden, certainly a daughter is forbidden. So too, says the Rambam, the Torah thought, figured that we would intuit that if Bishul is Asr, certainly Achila is Asr. So there's a famous comment of the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah was written by Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. It's Kesef Mishnah is his commentary on the Rambam, in the Mishnah Torah. And the Kesef Mishnah says, he suggests, what the Rambam means to say is, the reason the Torah Asr'd Bishul is a Syog. It's to prevent, to make sure that we don't come to eat basar b'chalav. Meaning, what the Rambam holds is that the Torah only prohibited basar b'chalav, bishul basar b'chalav, as a syag, as a fence, to guard, to make sure that we don't come to eat basar b'chalav. Really, the Torah is makbid on eating basar b'chalav. In order to prevent us from coming close to eating basar b'chalav, the Torah prevented bishul basar b'chalav. That is a comment of the Kesef Mishnah. So there are those who, over the years, have wanted to use this Kesef Mishnah as a relevant source lahalacha in the following scenario. Let's say a person goes to a culinary school and they're learning about how to cook certain items. So you're training with different types of you know, different types of recipes, different ingredients. So let's say one of the recipes calls for basar v'chalav. So you don't plan on eating the food. You don't plan on eating the food because it's an experiment. Or let's say a person is a chemist and you're trying a new type of potion, whatever it is, a new type of medication. But part of the recipe for the medication is some form of basar v'chalav. So you don't plan on eating it, obviously. It's all experimentation, but a necessary step in the experimentation is to cook basar v'chalav. So would we say, could we say, that since the whole reason, now you see where this is going, since the whole reason the Torah assered bishul of basar v'chalav is to prevent eating it, so what would you say in a scenario where we know you're not going to eat it, you have no intention of eating it, it's so far-fetched that you're going to eat it, would we say that you're allowed to cook basar v'chalav? So, what? No. Why not? What?
It's a fence.
It's a siyag. But if this... It's a separate isser hana. Unless you're not going to get hana from it. You're not getting hana from it. What hana are you getting?
You're doing well.
The siyag is his own isser. For bishul basar v'chalav. It's a isser daraisa. But let's say if the whole reason the Torah assered bishul basar v'chalav is so that you don't come to eat it, if for sure there's no chance that you're going to eat it, maybe it should be mutter.
It's not
up for
interpretation.
Exactly. Was that what Shimon would say? Exactly. So, at first glance, this should be dependent on the machlokas tanoim of whether darshin in time of the Torah or lo darshin in time of the Torah. According to Reb Shimon the Tana who holds darshin in time of the Torah, we look to the reasoning of the halacha to determine when and when not to apply the halacha. So then that would make a lot of sense. If the Kesef Mishnah is right, that the whole purpose of prohibiting bishul basar v'chalav is to limit eating the basar v'chalav, so maybe if we're not going to eat it, if he's not going to eat it, maybe it should be mutter to cook it. However, the problem is we pass like Rabbi Yehuda, lo darshin in time of the Kra. So therefore, you cannot use the reasoning of the Kesef Mishnah to use that as a kula to allow cooking the basar b'chalav. So this was a tshuva of the Dovid Misharim, the Chubina Rav, one of the great Yushalmi poskim of the early 20th century. And he had this shayla, and he pointed out that l'chora, one may think that they can use this Kesef Mishnah as a sniff l'hakel, a reason to be mekel, but l'chora, it should run into a problem of darshinan time, lo darshinan time of the crop. Let's just give one more example where the poskim attempt to do this. There is a prohibition of machilin ketanim machalos asurus, sfiya biyadayim. We know that ketanim, generally speaking, are not obligated in Torah mitzvos. Right? There's a mitzvah of chinuch, but in terms of a mitzvah daraisa, there's no mitzvah until a person's bar mitzvah to observe Torah mitzvos. That's clear. However, there is a prohibition for an adult to give a katan, a minor, non-kosher food. There is a prohibition for an adult to facilitate a katan to do isurim, whether it be chil Shabbos, whether it be non-kosher, whatever, for a kohen to become tameh. That is the prohibition of sfiya biyadayim, directly facilitating a katan to do averos or to be mevatel mitzvos. That's the prohibition of sfiya biyadayim. What's the reason? Why would the Torah prohibit us adults from facilitating ketanim to do isurim? They're not obligated in Torah mitzvos. So the Truma Sedeshin, one of the late Rishonim, Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin, says that the reason the Torah prohibited Sfiya biyadayim, you can't facilitate katanim to do averos, is because it's going to accustom them to do averos when they're older. If they're used to eating Burger King when they're 11 years old, 12 years old, what's going to stop them when they're 13 years old? If they're used to violating Shabbos, turning lights on and off on Shabbos, driving in the car on Shabbos when they're 11 and 12, what's going to stop them when they're 13? Therefore, the Torah prohibited adults from aiding and facilitating ketanim to do isurim. Oh, That is the Trumas Hadeshah. So the Chasam Sofer has a very important tshuva where he discusses the following case. Let's say you have a katan that you know is never going to become obligated in Torah mitzvos. Rachman al Islam, let's say you have a child who is doesn't have his full mental capacity and is never going to become obligated in Torah mitzvos. Like some disorder where the child is never going to become obligated, is going to be a halachic shota, and is never going to be obligated in Torah mitzvos. Is the parent or adult allowed to give the child machalos asuros? Right? Let's say, Rahman al-Islam, there's a question of putting a child in a home. Does the parent have to be medactic? Does the parent have to be makbid that the home is kosher? We know that there's a prohibition of sfiya b'yadayim, that you're not allowed to give children machalos asuros. You're not allowed to facilitate and aid them to do yisurim. However, says the Chasam Sofer, according to the Trumas Hadeshin, where the whole prohibition of aiding and facilitating tanim to do yisurim is so that they don't become accustomed to doing averos when they're obligated in the mitzvos, when they're obligated in refraining from averos, maybe we can suggest that if the child is never going to become obligated in Torah mitzvos, maybe there'd be no prohibition to give them when they're ketanim. Because since the whole reason you can't give them when they're ketanim is because we don't want them to be accustomed to doing averos when they're obligated to observe Torah mitzvos, maybe if they're never going to become obligated in Torah mitzvos, there's no prohibition to give them yisurim machalos asuros when they're ketanim. So the Chasam Sofer says maybe this Trumas Hadeshin, this comment of the Trumas Hadeshin, is a tremendous kula for the Shaila, that maybe a parent would be able to send the child to a non-kosher home, because since they're never going to become obligated in Torah mitzvos, there's no prohibition right now to give them machalos asuros. That is the Chasam Sofer with the Trumas Hadeshin. So the Chasam Sofer says, but not so fast, because l'chora, I'm in a violation of our famous klal, Lo Darshina in time of the crop. The Trumas Hadeshin gave a very fancy reason for the prohibition of Sfiya B'yadayim, that we don't want the child to become accustomed to doing averos when they're older. But how does he know that? Did the Torah ever say that explicitly? No. The Trumas Hadeshin intuited that that's the basis, that's the reason the Torah asserted giving ketanim machalos asuros.
What is the source?
Sorry. What is the source? The Gemara says, Rashi in the beginning of Parshas Emor quotes it from Emor el Kohanim, Bnei Aaron, Emor v'Amarta, Lahasir Dolim al Haktanim. That's one source. That's Rashi in Parshas Emor quotes that from a Medrash Halacha. And the Gemara in Yevamos quotes that from a different source. I forget. But the Chazal have three different sources for this prohibition. The question is, why do you need three sources? We're not going to get into the details of that halacha right now, but that is one. Emor v'amarta, lahazir hagdolim al haktanim. That's for to not be metame a kohen who's a katan, even though he's not obligated in tumah when he's a katan, but we don't want him to be accustomed to going to cemeteries, lest he continue when he's a gadol. So says the Chasam Sofer that at first glance this Trumas Hadeshin would be a basis for a tremendous kula, but it would be a violation of Lo Darshin and time of the crowd, because since the Trumas Hadeshin's reasoning is gevaldik, it's very mistaber, it makes a lot of sense, but since it's not explicit in the Torah, therefore since we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda Lo Darshin and time of the crowd, we can't use the reason for the mitzvah, why the Torah assert it, to tell us when and when not to apply the halacha. So, Chasam Sofer tried, but not so fast. Lo darshina and time the crow. So now back to our sugya. L'chora, our Gemara seems to be a violation of the klal of lo darshina and time the crow. Again, our Gemara said what? Rav Pinchas Mishmei de Rava said that since the basis for the halacha of Hafaras HaBaal is Kol HaNoderes Al Das Baila HiNoderes, every woman, when she takes a neder, she has her husband's ratzon in mind. Therefore, that's the basis for the institution of Hafaras HaBaal. And the Gemara used that reason to say, to apply this, that Hafaras HaBaal applies even when there's no technical halachic nisuin, right? When once the Baal becomes obligated in supporting his wife, the Gemara in Maseches Nida says even if there is only a rabbinic marriage, even if it's not a biblical marriage, that would be sufficient for the Baal to be able to be mefer of the neder based on kol hanederes al das baila hino deres. So, l'chora, that should be a problem of lo darshin and taima dekra. No? Isn't the Torah saying, isn't the Gemara saying that the reason a Baal can be made for the nether is because the woman takes a nether with her husband in mind, and we're using that reasoning to apply and expand the halacha of Hafaras Baal? Shouldn't that be a problem of lo darshinan taima dekra? Everyone hear the question?
What do you mean expand?
Because technically speaking, Hafaras Baal is limited to nisuin, right?
Okay.
Meaning, to be mefer on his own, he needs to have nisuin. It has to be past Erisin. But the Gemara says, according to some opinions, that the Baal can do hafara even before technical nisuin takes place, when he becomes obligated in supporting her, or when there's only rabbinic marriage, because of the idea of kol hanoderes al das baila hinoderes. So we're using the reason of the halacha to expand the concept of hafara sabal. Isn't that lo darshinan taima de kra? Everyone hear the question? Okay. So perhaps one can suggest a fundamental chiluk between all the cases that we've mentioned up until now and kol hanoderes al das baila hinoderes. In yeshiva, they often they teach you that there are two types of questions one can ask. One is the why question. Why did the Torah prohibit this? Why did the Torah obligate this? And then there's the what question. The what question is not why did the Torah do this, but what is the nature, what is the parameter of this halacha? For example, we know that there's a mitzvah of chalitza, right? There's a mitzvah of chalitza. What's chalitza? So if a man dies, he's married, he dies without any children, and he has a brother. So his brother now has a mitzvah to either do yibum or chalitza to his sister-in-law, the wife of his deceased brother. That is yibum and chalitza. So let's say the woman has no plans on ever getting remarried. She has no plans on ever getting remarried. So would the husband, the brother of the deceased, have to do chalitza? Would he have to do chalitza? Or do we say no? Chalitza is to allow her to get remarried. And if she never wants to get remarried, no, she doesn't have to do chalitza. In other words, is chalitza a matir? Is the nature of the mitzvah of chalitza to allow the woman to get remarried, that she doesn't have to be trapped the rest of her life? She can get remarried, and chalitza is a tool, is the mitzvah, the halachic mechanism to allow her to get remarried. Or do we say, no, chalitza is a mitzvah. It's true that it will allow her to get remarried, but there's a mitzvah, regardless of whether she intends to get remarried, there's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon her and her brother-in-law to do the mitzvah of chalitza, regardless of her future intentions. So now there's a tremendous nafkamina, like we just said. What? Let's say she doesn't want to get married. She doesn't intend on getting remarried. Would we still insist upon them doing chalitza? So it depends. If chalitza is a matir, it's to allow her, the nature of the mitzvah chalitza is to allow her to get remarried. So it depends on whether she wants to get remarried or not. But if chalitza is a mitzvah, it's not a matir, it's a mitzvah. So regardless of her intention of whether she wants to get remarried, we will insist upon them doing chalitza. So now, is that time to crow? Whether chalitza is a matir or a mitzvah. So I would argue, and also I saw this in Rabbi Shweiss's Sefer on Parshas Chukas, that chalitza, that question of whether chalitza is a mitzvah or a matir, is not a why question. It's not why the Torah gave the mitzvah of chalitza. It's what. What is the nature? What is the parameter of the mitzvah of chalitza? Is the nature of the mitzvah of chalitza a matir to allow her to get remarried, and therefore it should be dependent on whether she wants to get remarried or not. That will determine whether we'll insist on chalitza or no. The nature of chalitza, the parameter, the hagdara of chalitza is a mitzvah. And therefore, regardless of whether she intends on getting remarried, we will insist on her and him doing chalitza. So you see the difference. That's not a why question, that's a what question. What is the nature of the mitzvah of chalitza? What is the mechanism of the mitzvah of chalitza? And there are other countless examples of this. The why question versus the what question. So l'chora, one can suggest that when it comes to our sugya of kol hanoderes, adas baile hinoderes, that's not why. Why did the Torah create the institution of hafaras habal? It's not why the Torah instituted hafaras habal. It's what? What is the mechanism of hafaras habal? What gives the baal the koach, the halachic strength, the halachic ability to do hafaras haneder? It's because of this reality. But it's not why, it's the mechanism. Since the baal, the woman, takes a neder with her husband in mind, that is the mechanism which allows the baal to be in a position to do hafara. Now, we had a major machlokas rishonim whether that is a paradigm, that mechanism is a paradigm, and we can apply it to other types of relationships, like when I take a neder with Evan in mind. Can we also now have a type of hafara? Or do we say no? Like the Ran said, no, it's limited to an Isha and her husband, kol hanoderes aldas baile hinoderes. But either way, it's not why the Torah instituted a hafaras habal. It's what? What is the mechanism? What's the parameter? What's the nature of the din of hafaras habal? That's what Rabbi Shawai suggests in the Sefer. And perhaps that's how we can better understand the idea of kol hanoderes aldas baile hinoderes and why it's not a violation of the rule of lo darshin and time dekra. Darshin and time dekra is a question of the why. Why the Torah prohibited. So if we have a reason why the Torah prohibited something or why the Torah obligated something, we can never use that reason, the answer to the why question, to limit or expand the halacha. But the what question, the ma, what's the nature of this halacha? What's the parameter of this halacha? We always use that. We always use that in learning. That's lamdas. Lamdas is always trying to understand the depth, the nature of a mitzvah, of a halacha, and trying to use that to expand and to understand when and when not to apply a halacha. That is perhaps a suggestion is how to understand the idea of kol hanoderes aldas baile hinoderes. Okay, that is part one of tonight's chavurah. Anyone have the time? 23. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Very quick. So, on Daf Ein Zayinum Beis, we had a Gemara in Source 6. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Chacham Shomer B'Loshon Baal, Baal Shomer B'Loshon Chacham, Lo Amar Klum. We know that the Loshon a Chacham uses when he's Matir the Neder is Mutterlach, right? Everyone knows from Rosh Hashanah, Mutterlach, Mutterlach, Mutterlach. That is the Loshon that the Beis Din uses when a person goes to be Matir and Neder. However, what's the Loshon that the Baal uses? Not Mutterlach, but Mufferlach, right? Mufferlach, Loshon Hafara, Mufferlach. So the Gemara says that if the Baal were to use the Lashon of Mutterlach, or the Chacham, the Beis Din, were to use the Lashon of Mufferlach, it does not work. Right. Everyone has to stay in their lane. They have to use the right Lashon. Why? What's the etymology? What's the implication of the Lashon of Matir versus the Lashon of Mufar? So the Ran in Maseches Nedarim over there on Ein Ches Menal says, take a look at the bold. He's basing this on a comment of the Talmud Yerushalmi. Lufiza mashmali delisha de mefer shayach mikan ve'elach. Says the Ran, the lashon of hafara has an implication of mikan ve'elach from now on. From now on, the neder is going to be null and void. Velishna the mutter. And the Lashon of Mutter, which is the Lashon that the Beis Din uses when being Matir and Eder, is Bedavar Shahaya Mutter Mi'ikara. The Mashma'us, the implication of the Lashon of Mutter, implies retroactively making it as if the Neder never existed. Hafara is canceling out the Neder from now on, and Mutterlach is being Oker, uprooting the Neder, Meikaro. That is the mechanism of Mutterlach. What's the Nafkamina? What's a nafka mina? Why is this significant? So at least one nafka mina, the Ran in Nedarim, on Daf Ayin Hay quotes. There is a halacha of Hutter Echad, Hutter Kulam. Let's say I take a neder, and then I say, I'm a nazir. And then Evan says, Va'ani. And then Eitan says, Va'ani. And then Daniel says, Va'ani. We all do a circle, and we all become Nazirim. But everyone's neder started with my neder. So we learned earlier in Maseches Nedarim that if I'm matir my neder, since all of your Nedarim were dependent on my neder, if my neder is gone, everyone's neder is gone. The Ran, quoting a Gemara in Maseches Nazir, says that's not true when it comes to Hafaras Abal. Let's say I'm a woman and I take a neder that I'm going to be a Nazir, and we do the same thing. And then my husband comes and does Hafara of my neder. So says the Gemara Nedarim, even though my neder is cancelled out, everyone else's neder stays the same. Why is that? So the Ran explains, the difference between Hafara and Hatara is that since Hatara is oker the neder mikaro, it's as if the neder was never there. So therefore, when my neder is gone, and everyone else's neder was contingent upon my neder, when the Chacham is matir the neder, he's oker the neder mikaro, therefore, that uproots everyone else's neder. Because everyone else's neder was dependent, contingent upon my neder, and when mine as if it was never there, therefore everyone else's neder is going to be completely gone. However, when it comes to Hafara, explains the Ran, since Hafara is only mikan ve'elech, mikan olaba, therefore, even though it's true that everyone else's neder was contingent upon my neder, but since Hafara only affects the neder, mikan ve'elech, mikan olaba, therefore, even though everyone else's nether was contingent upon my nether, but since Hafar only affects the nether, mikan ve'elach, it doesn't go to the root of the nether, so therefore everyone else's nether is going to remain in existence. Because if you go back in history, my nether was really there, because the Baal only attacks it, mikan ulaba, that is the lashon of Hafar. That is the lashon of Hafar. Okay, so that is one nafkamina. Again, Hataras Neder works to be oker the Neder Mikaro. And Hafara works Mikan Ve'elach to cancel the Neder Mikan Ve'elach. And the nafkamina of when my Neder becomes Hutar, what happens to everyone else's Neder? So now, the Rosh, the Maseches Nedarim, quotes from the Talmud Yushalmi a very important question. We learned way back when that Nedarim are a davar sheish lo matir, right? Since the neder can become matir through hataras chacham, therefore it's a davar sheish lo matir. So if you have something that was aser because of a neder and it becomes mixed in a whole tarovis, it's never going to be batel because it is a davar sheish lo matir. Yeah, that we learned about way back when, and we gave a chabur on that. Okay. So the Yushalmi asks, wait a second. If the way Hataras Nedarim works is that it's oker the nether mikaro, and it's as if the nether never existed, it's not really a davar sheish lamatirin. What's a davar sheish lamatirin? Something is aser, and it becomes mutter. Right? Let's say muktzah. Right? That's the Gemara Maseches Beitzah. Muktzah is a davar sheish lamatirin because it was muktzah on Shabbos, and then it becomes mutter after Shabbos. Right? So asks the Yushalmi, if Hataras Chacham works to be oker the neder mikaro, it's as if it was never usser, so it's not a dover sheyesh lamatirin. Dover sheyesh lamatirin is it was usser, became mutter. This was never usser. It was never usser. When the Chacham says mutter lach, mutter lach, mutter lach, we go back in time and view it as if the neder never existed, the object was never usser. So how can we say that Nedarim are a davar sheyesh lo matirin? It was never usser. It was never usser. Everyone hear the question? Great question, right? Oh. So the Yushalmi, so everyone was blown away from the lumdis of last week, the ktsais, the tefillin, and the... This is incredible lumdis right here. Everyone's going to go wild. Okay. If you take a look at the bold, if we have a couple minutes. the bold and the Yerushalmi and the Rush. The Chayvin Shalker also Meikaru Nimtzah Shalom Neser Mi'olam. So the Rush asked the question. The Yerushalmi asked the question. Since the Chacham is Oker the Nether Meikaru, it was never Aser. V'lo Havi Davar Sheish Matirin. So that's our question. So Amri, they said in the Yerushalmi, it's true. Okro. Ella mikan ulhaba. He's okeret mikan ulhaba. Well, what does that mean? Kolomer. Iker ha'ikor mikan ulhaba. Shahari haya asr ad ata. It was asr up until now. Va'afal pisha okro mikaro. Even though it's true, we're okeret mikaro. Mikomokom haya asr ad hayom. Nevertheless, it was asr until today. Hilkach chashiv davar shiyesh lo matirin. So a very cryptic statement of the Yerushalmi. So the way the Gedolei Achronim understand this Yerushalmi, Rav Chanan Wasserman, Rav Chaim, they say that this Yerushalmi is being mechadish a very important concept. You ready for this? L'mafreya mikan ulahaba. Retroactive from now on. Well, isn't that a tarti disaster? Isn't that a contradiction? How can something be retroactive yet be from now on? Mikan ulahaba. So perhaps the pshat is as follows. It's true that the nether is ne'kar mikar. However, we only treat it as if it was never there from now on. We don't actually go back in time and say the nether was never there. When we say that the chacham is oker the nether mikaro, what we mean to say is that from now on, we'll treat it as if the nether never existed. It did exist. You know, if you take a history class and the professor says, did the nether exist? It existed. But with respect to the halacha, we'll treat it as if it never existed. Okay.